Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So we're back after a, well, the whole show had a hiatus.
Yes.
You had a longer one.
Well, I had a good reason for it. I got a chance to do a trip that I've been wanting to take since I was 12 years old. Suffice to say, I am not 12 years old anymore.
Right.
I am a very far distance from 12. And I got to take a cross-country motorcycle tour by myself, which was lovely and wonderful.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, welcome back. Obviously, a lot's happened in geek culture since you've been gone. We have to kind of pick and choose because...
Oh, lots happened full stop. I just got laid out for my job today.
That's true. Now, to be fair, you signed up saying, hey, I volunteer to be laid off first.
True. And yet.
So, yeah, with that... It has been a while. Last episode, of course, we had Jillian.
Yes.
And we discussed the adventures at Bat's Day, which you and I have talked about. So there's no reason to recover that.
True.
One thing that, since it has been so long, one thing that happened really shortly after I returned from Bat's Day was the news at Phoenix Comic Con.
Oh my, yes.
So for those of you that don't know, or just the news had passed by... A while back at Phoenix Comic Con, one of the guests was Jason David Frank from Power Rangers.
Okay.
And somebody showed up at the convention armed, guns and knives.
And we're not talking props, we're talking actual...
Actual weaponry, with the intent of attacking Mr. Frank.
Wow.
So he was stopped ahead of time, thankfully. No harm was done, but the convention... suddenly found itself in the really rough position of a lot of scrutiny because it happened like first day.
Yeah.
So the convention made the, I think, somewhat understandable decision to put heavy restrictions on weaponry.
Yes.
And this included anything that looks like it could have been a gun, yeah. Prop weapons, and... they were still allowing vendors who were selling weapons to sell them, but they had to be heavily bagged. They couldn't be in some way visible.
Right.
And I know there was some grumbling from a person that did high-quality lightsaber replicas, where they actually ended up asking for a refund for their booth space. And that got tense, and I think it was more of, that was a case where I think both sides were probably not handling it well. But overall, I think the point was that in this environment, and frankly, with the current environment in the country, which is, let's face it, tempers are a little bit more on fray, there's a little bit more agitation.
There's a little more, there have been far too many instances of people showing up with guns and doing grievous organic damage.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I cannot in any way speak for any of the cons that I have volunteered for in the past. That said, as an experience... of volunteering for said cons and multiple cons, really, it's a pain in various parts of my anatomy to deal with these people who want to bring in these hyper-realistic props for their cosplay. And, you know, I saw what the social media person had to deal with. And these people are like, oh, I'll take the firing pin out of this actual pistol so it couldn't actually possibly be used. And I'm like, no! It's still a real gun. I understand that you are taking the firing pin out. I also know how easy it is to put a firing pin back in.
Yeah.
So, and frankly, as a con-goer, A, I feel safer my own self. B, as someone who has dabbled in cosplay... the idea of schlepping around some big, heavy prop, whether it is real or imaginary, just seems silly.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience to schlep it around.
Yeah, and I understand with cosplay, a lot of the goals often is get as close to the character as possible.
True.
But, I mean, there is a balancing act, and we're unfortunately in a place where... you know, we may have to, for right now, say, you know what, you don't need to, maybe you do have to have the it's clearly a plastic gun
You either that or maybe, just maybe, call me crazy here. What makes, I don't know, King Arthur, King Arthur? Is it his armor or is it the sword? It's his armor. It's the costume. No one's going to, you know, you can have a hilt sticking out of your hip and people are going to take it to be a sword. You're looking for the entire, you're looking for the person, not the prop.
Yeah. So that went on. Now, the other thing that is interesting, and this is going on right now.
Yeah.
There is a lawsuit between Salt Lake City Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con.
My city's in the news again. I don't know what to think about this.
Over the term Comic Con.
What?
So, basically, San Diego's claiming copyright over the term Comic Con as two words.
That's so sweet.
So, this is going through because they're did a cease and desist to San Diego. So, Emerald City gets away with it by its one word.
Oh, this is like how we used to have Spiral Scouts be one word so that Boy Scouts wouldn't be upset at us?
Yeah. So that's, yeah,
silly.
That's going on. And we'll see how that resolves. It's actually in court right now. They are hearing arguments. I saw news about it today.
That just seems a little extreme. Well, I understand that San Diego has built up a reputation, and it is the forerunners of the cons that make the rest of the cons money.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's a convention. It's about comics. Do we have to do the little tap dance of, it is a convention about comics, it is not Comic-Con?
Well, that's what this court case is going to determine.
I haven't helped.
Basically, it'll come down to how generic is the term.
Yeah.
But that also gets down to the question of, you know, Xerox and Kleenex. You know, those aren't generic. We use them as generic terms, but they're actual brand names.
True.
So, it'll be, let's just say, it'll be interesting that it has, is the San Diego Comic-Con, but...
And it's been around for how many years?
The park
staff, they have lawyers.
Yeah. All right. Sorry for the little hiccup there. We're having some... making sure we're not having technical glitches on the recording. So, anyway, moving on...
Dug-a-dum.
Two movies.
Yay! Oh my God, Wonder Woman! Sorry, yes, what?
Yeah, basically. Oh my God. So now, you haven't actually seen it yet.
I have not had a chance to see it. If the temperature continues being stupid hot for Seattle, translation over 90, yeah, we're going to go see it probably this weekend.
Yeah.
But I've heard lots and lots and lots of fan squeeing over the fact that it's a remarkably good film.
And I think that's just it. It's a good movie. It's that care of getting the right creator.
Yep.
And yes, a lot of people are like, well, it's a female director doing a movie about Wonder Woman. And I'm sure that helps. I think it's the same thing as having, you know, an African-American showrunner doing Luke Cage.
Yes.
You know, there's a level of understanding of certain things that gets through. But with Wonder Woman, they hit all the big iconic things you would want to hit. There's also just the fascination of, and we talked about this before when we were talking about the trailers, setting it in World War I.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, suffrage was still a discussion point.
Yes, when it was still up for debate.
Yeah. So that's very good movie. And the thing with it, a lot of people, I think we've heard before the complaints about casting of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Where a lot of people are, well, she, you know, she doesn't look muscular. It's like, you weren't paying attention to this movie. This is a woman, first off, she was hired because of her combat experience, in
yep.
part. I mean, she also can act.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in the movie where she's in a elegant gown, where she looks perfect and elegant, and then she reaches up with her arm to grab a weapon, and when she flexes her arm, you see the biceps pop.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, don't give me this. And the thing is, she is athletic. And the other thing is, they hired, for the Amazons, they hired athletes.
Yeah.
To play the Amazons.
Well, and weren't you saying, I mean, one of the Amazons is a boxer. And she's not going to look like a supermodel in armor.
No.
She's going to look like a boxer. She's going to look like a warrior, which is what they are.
Yeah, and her scenes in the movie, which she is one of... I don't think she has any speaking lines, but she's playing a character in the comics known as Artemis.
Yeah.
And you know, there's, while no speaking lines, let's just say she does stand out.
Yes.
She leaves in a way that says Wonder Woman might have trouble here.
Yes.
If she were. Yeah, so that goes well. The cast was great. And again, it's that representation factor.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, the other movie I saw, I realized that I don't think, because I saw it after I came back from Disney.
Okay.
And so we didn't talk about it when Jill was co-hosting, but that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yes.
So first off, anything else on, you haven't seen Wonder Woman yet.
Have not seen Wonder Woman.
It was very good. It was very good. And I think that my hope with Wonder Woman is that DC will take the lessons that of this movie and go, yes, no, there are ways you can have a distinct cinematic universe different than Marvel's and still be successful. Just remember, your superheroes are first and foremost
heroes. Yeah. No, that is a lovely, wonderful thing. And the other part of it is that everything that I've seen does not strike me as grimdark, 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 grimdark.
No. Even though, you know, World War I does lend to a little grim.
Yes. And?
Yeah. So the other, Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously that's been out for a while. Everyone's spoken on it. Definitely enjoyable. The thing I took from it, two actors in this movie. Kurt Russell, obviously a very prominent.
Nice to see you still get work, yeah.
But Sylvester Stallone as well.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at both of these guys and it's like, Stallone is in his 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Russell's not that far behind him.
No.
They both look amazingly good for their ages. And I think it's part of it is guys who generally took care of themselves.
Well, and let's be honest, at the same time, men in Hollywood are allowed to get old.
They are allowed to get old. And I think that's probably maybe part of the challenge. Because going back to Wonder Woman briefly,
yeah.
I can't believe we glossed over this. So sure, Kurt Russell can get older and still get interesting parts. Sylvester Stallone. So let's take a moment to talk about Robin Wright.
Oh, you mean Buttercup?
So Robin Wright is, and I cannot remember the proper pronunciation of her character's name.
Antiope?
I think is around it.
Antiope, one of the two.
From Wonder Woman, where she's the general. I think it's hinted that she might actually be Diana's aunt.
Yeah.
She's definitely the leader of the Amazonian army and Diana's primary trainer. Robin Wright, Princess Buttercup from The Princess Bride, the First Lady from House of Cards.
Yeah.
And she's sitting there, and the first thing you look at it is, Robin, you're in shape. I mean, you stand up there pretty well with these female athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Great performance. And all the Amazons have an accent that's not an American accent. And it's, you know, it's fascinating. But it's this, she conveys the power of the character where, you know, it makes sense. She's a general. She's going to be older.
Yes.
Yet I look at it and going, yeah, I mean, again, there is a certain level where I think some of these actresses are sort of demanding, no, yeah, I'm getting older, but you're still going to respect me.
Yeah. See, also, I mean, the second half of the meme is Robin Wright as Buttercup and as Antiope and Carrie Fisher as the young princess and as General Organa.
Yeah.
I mean, we have lived, as the thing says, we have loved long enough to see our princesses become generals.
Yeah.
And in the case of
Terrence Stamp,
we have lived long enough to see our childhood generals become queens. But
that's a whole nother issue. Although Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is a fine movie.
And it's Pride Month, so
it
hey.
It really is. So anyway,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think the only thing I will say about Guardians of the Galaxy, since it has been out for a while, is it was another really fun movie. James Gunn knows how to make these films.
Oh, yeah.
And very little wasted space.
Nope.
He really understands his characters well. He knows his tone. Although, and Jill actually pointed that out after she saw it, there might be a little bit of emotional manipulation in the movie.
Yeah, I think. Oh,
sorry. I actually saw it with my friend, the Gothfather, who, it was interesting, we actually saw it the day we came home from Disneyland. And we both independently showed up at the theater.
Nice.
And it's like, well, I guess we're seeing this movie together.
Yep.
Got out and he went, that was fun. I mean, it was Daddy Issues the movie.
Well.
But it was fun.
The one thing that I have to say, and I forget if I brought it up. I've had a couple things happen since last time we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that struck me the most about Guardians of the Galaxy had next to nothing to do with the movie.
All right.
In that movie, the guy playing Yondu, I forget his name.
Michael Rooker.
Makes the comment about, I'm Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's, yes.
Yes. We're a PG show. The thing that I love about that is within 2 weeks of the movie coming out,
mm-hmm.
I see a picture from a Comic-Con back east of a woman from the neck down. It is a perfect spot-on screen-accurate Mary Poppins costume. From the neck up, she's Yondu. Blue with the mohawk. Within 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
This tells me that this incredibly brilliant person saw that, put it together, and managed to put together a spot-on costume in 2 weeks. Where she did a mashup of the two of them.
Yeah.
I think that right there is modern geek culture. To be able to take something like that and mash it up and make it look good. So if you're out there, I love you.
I also like that a couple weeks after that, Michael Rooker went to Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
And found Mary Poppins.
Of course he did. If he didn't, I'd be upset.
And there was that picture. So that was another beautiful moment. Thank you. Thank you, James Gunn.
Yes.
Say thank you, James Gunn. The only other thing with movies is there's been some good trailers.
Oh, my, yes.
So you've seen the Black Panther trailer.
Drooled all over it, watched it 3 times,
Yeah, it's looking good. And again, it's another case where Marvel knows they really have to land this one.
Yes, they do.
And especially because with the Black Panther, they've already whet our appetite with the great portrayal of the character in Captain America Civil War.
Yes, indeed.
And they really need to follow up. And it looks like they're doing fine. They've got the right director.
Mm-hmm.
The cast, and of course, there are those less culturally aware people out there that are bemoaning the fact that it's a predominantly black cast. And I'm like, I'm sorry, it's set in Africa.
Well, let's be specific here. This is where. How often do I do this? Uh-huh. I am putting my nerd hat on here.
Okay.
It's set in Wakanda, which is a specifically isolationist country in Africa. So it is Africa, Africans for Africans. The rest of y'all keep out.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's going to have lots of black people. It's in Africa.
Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, to me, it doesn't detract because anything else would seem weird.
Yes. It was weird enough watching the trailer and having the only person with a speaking role in that trailer be the South African guy. The Anglo-South African guy talking about I've seen it, and I forget his name in the movies. But
it's Claw, Ulysses Claw. That's my nerd moment. Somebody pointed out, so that was Andy Serkis being interrogated by Martin Freeman. So it was Gollum being interrogated by Bilbo Baggins.
What's in its pockets and string or nothing. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Also, there's another meme that is coming out of it because Michael B. Jordan is appearing as one of the main antagonists in the movie, and he appears in the trailer. He played the Human Torch in the more recent reboot of the Fantastic Four.
Oh, Fantorstic?
Yeah. And somebody pointed out, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe giving work to ex-Human Torches since whenever Captain America came out.
Well, isn't Michael B. Jordan the guy that was, I'm going to have a brain fry moment here. Wasn't he in the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No. You're thinking of J. August Richard.
You're right.
No, Michael B. Jordan's first big role that I recognized him in was Chronicle.
Chronicle, yes.
Chronicle, the found footage superhero movie. So He's kind of had a bent towards the fantastical, but he looked great in there. I found it interesting. The actor next to him was the lead actor from Get Out, who yes. is. It's a great cast. There's great actors in it, and I can't wait. The other, obviously, we got Thor Ragnarok,
which is lovely.
Which is going to be the next Marvel movie after Spider-Man, which opens next week.
Well, wait a minute. Ragnarok happens before Black Panther?
Yeah.
Wow.
It'll be Spider-Man, Ragnarok, then Black Panther.
Wow. Okay.
So there, yeah, it's... But with Thor, here's the weird thing with Thor. as a long-term comic fan, I'm going, all right, I recognize that run, and that run that they're mashing the story together for. So a lot of it seems to be inspired by Walt Simonson's run on Thor in the late 80s, early 90s, which gave us Beta Ray Bill, the Last Stand of Scourge the Executioner, and Frog Thor.
Beg your pardon?
Frog Thor. Thor got turned into a frog. Literally, somebody kissed him. He turned into a frog. To break the enchantment, he had to pick up Mjolnir as a frog, which turned him into a 6-foot-tall frog in Thor's costume, where he could then get the enchantment broken. But that's the one element they don't seem to be pulling from Walter. At least I don't think they're going to pull that. I haven't seen anything in the trailer.
I have to say is, half the audience plus 10%, pauses to contemplate Chris Hemsworth with a 6-foot tongue. Moving on.
But the other part is Planet Hulk.
Oh, yes.
So, especially because they do have one of the iconic moments was the last stand of a character, Scourge the Executioner, who you clearly see in the trailer being played by Carl Urban.
Excellent.
Recreating a scene that's clearly from that run. So I don't know if they're going to be able to get the emotional weight of that scene. It's iconic to long-term comic fans, but it'll be interesting.
I chalk it up to, A, it's Carl Urban. He's going to do well.
That's a given.
B, the director has already indicated that this movie is going to be so far over the top, you're going to look over him and say, what top?
Yeah, I can't wait.
It's going to be lovely.
So, the last thing, I don't think you've seen it yet because it just came out today.
Eh.
They released the first trailer for Jumanji.
No, I have not.
And I cannot tell if it's the idea that it's a complete reboot or it's just a same universe. The thing I like is they're taking the core concept of Jumanji and updating it. So the core concept game that starts infringing on reality.
Okay.
But in this, it's a group of teenagers find an old console gaming system.
Oh no.
And when they boot up the game and select their characters, they then get sucked into the game and are physically transformed into the characters.
Ruh-roh.
So what you have is a whole bunch of teenagers. Once they're in the game, they're suddenly the main cast, which is Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan.
Okay.
And for a comedy adventure, my first thought is, if you're doing a comedy adventure movie, that's the right cast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I will watch Dwayne Johnson do just about anything except for Baywatch.
And the idea that he's playing a teenage boy trapped in this buff body.
Because he is a teenage boy trapped in that buff body. Let's call a spade a shovel here for a second.
Well, one of the jokes is so that notice I mentioned a cast of three guys and a female.
Yeah.
The teenagers are two guys, two girls.
Uh-huh. Okay. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. The other female character is being played by Jack Black. He has shown good acting chops in other things. Yes, it's going to be over the top comedy, but
I got two words for you: Shallow Hal.
We'll see. I have a little bit more. I have more faith in his evolution as a performer.
You have seen him far more recently than I have, so.
So we'll see how it turns out. I'll be honest, Jennifer Lovely of Don't Read the Latin says I'm not always the best barometer for quality. She said it, you didn't.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit here and say, look, a distraction, moving on. You want to keep talking trailers?
Sure.
Because some of the trailers that I've seen have only been, the other one that stood out for me was the trailer for The Defenders.
All right.
Okay, so having Jessica Jones being interrogated and have Matt Murdock bust in and say, I'm your lawyer, was lovely.
Being interrogated by Misty Knight.
Oh, I missed that part, sorry. And then to have Luke Cage with the nurse, the night nurse, I forget her name off the top of my head.
Claire.
The thing that is enough to make me overlook Finn Jones as a horrible, horrible Iron Fist. Sigourney Weaver, she's getting work again. It's lovely. I'm happy.
She still finds, again, aging actress finding work because damn it, she's that good.
Hell yes.
And,
I have to interject for just a second. I was remarkably bummed, and this can be the one swear word for the episode. I did a cross country road trip.
Uh-huh.
I make it to New York. I am doing the running tour of Lower Manhattan because, mm-hmm. you know, I have already been to Chicago where I saw the high school where they filmed
Breakfast Club
and both the community center and the church where they filmed Blues Brothers. I'm in New York. I want to see some geeky stuff. I'm making a pilgrimage to Hook and Ladder number 8 where they filmed the iconic building from Ghostbusters and where they made the fun of New York rent in the Ghostbusters reboot. I'm going there. I'm walking with a bag of smile on my face. There are two people in front of me who I can tell are also headed to the same place. We all walk up together. We see the building. It is wrapped from top to bottom in mesh because they're renovating and remodeling it. And all three of us to a person just say, shit.
Yeah.
But we made it there, so.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, since we've transitioned to TV.
Yes.
We're in that weird zone where the official TV season has ended.
Yeah.
And this is now where other things come into play.
Yes.
And for me, those other things, one is off-season shows.
Yeah.
But the other is, all right, let's catch up on some shows that maybe I didn't watch that are worth binging through other media.
Exactly. Thank you, Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah, and so kind of let's start with the weird.
Ooh, that doesn't narrow it down, but go for it.
The weird for me was, and this is the one I'm currently watching.
Okay.
I decided, what the heck, it's already on Netflix, even though the season just ended, Riverdale.
Ah, yes.
So, Riverdale is the new TV series based on the Archie comics.
But
with the tone, it's sort of like, okay, we're using the Archie characters, but the show is really a standard CW teen angsty drama with tonal similarities to Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I am enjoying watching it.
Yes.
This is not a hate watch.
No.
I am having fun with it. But I realized watching it, the writing at times is lazy.
Well, yeah.
They are doing really standard tropes. They aren't really doing anything interesting or innovating with the characters from a writing standpoint. The only thing that makes it step up a level for the enjoyment factor is that they are using the Archie characters, and so there's a deconstruction element.
The thing of it is, it is that incongruity of, wait a minute, this is Archie, Jughead, Veronica, and whatever her bucket name is, Betty.
Yeah.
I gotta say, though, if I had walked up to you 6 months ago, 12 months ago, and said, Jeff, they are going to do a Flintstone comic where it's social commentary about post-traumatic stress, war, and same-sex marriage. Would you have believed me?
Without evidence, no. It would have sounded crazy, and yet I've read those comics, and
yes.
I love them.
Yes. So, I mean, the fact that they are using these established characters to explore something new, I think is great and refreshing.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a little weird, and it's sad to say that they do fall into some of those tropes. Mm-hmm. It's still the first season.
Yeah.
I mean, if we judged shows by their first season, we'd be stuck with the encounter at Farpoint.
True.
So
yeah, it's like I said, I'm enjoying it. The actors are certainly engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting. I was because I'm that kind of guy. I do background research. The actor playing Archie, KJ Apa, is Samoan.
Awesome.
But he's a fairer complexion, and yeah, they dyed his hair red. So it's, the thing is, he's of fairer complexion, but he's not your standard redhead pale.
Yeah, he's not going to pass for Anglo
But what it does is, it between that and his darker eyebrows,
mm-hmm.
gives him a closer resemblance to the Archie from the comics.
Interesting.
So it kind of works, and Jughead is Cole. I want to say Spruce. He there was a show, the Sweet Life of Zach and Cody. I want to say it was a Disney show, and the guy who played Jughead was one of the twins who started that show. The rest of the and then of the young actors, there's no one who's done anything really significant before. The parents, on the other hand, are an interesting establishment of actors who are known for playing teenagers and characters. That you, Luke Perry is Archie's father.
Tell me Daphne Sunning gets some work for a change.
No, she's not in it, but Skeech Ulrich from the Scream movies is Jughead's father.
Yeah.
And and Archie's mother is Molly Ringwald.
Oh, God.
So,
which is where he gets his red hair from.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just sort of, that's an interesting juxtaposition as well. So it's a, like I say, it's a fun show. Now, moving on to the really enjoyable.
Oh, okay.
So, surprisingly so. So this is a case of a show I had given a pass on. In fact, we've talked about it here before where I saw the trailer and I went, eh. Pass and didn't watch it at all, in part because it was a DC Comics based show on Fox and I'd already been burned by Gotham.
Oh, this is the
it's Lucifer.
Ah, yes.
So Lucifer, this is technically based on the version of Lucifer Neil Gaiman created for Sandman.
Okay.
And it follows his basic story structure for what he wrote in that. And then the spin-off series from it, where Lucifer abandons hell and sets himself up on Earth, just sort of in a, screw you guys, I'm out of here.
Take my toys
and go opens place. A nightclub.
Tell me there's Mazikeen too?
Mazikeen is one of the main characters.
Really?
Mazikeen is one of the main characters.
Oh my.
But the reason I passed is I was like, there's no way they can do this story justice on a TV show. And I was right. So what they did instead was take those basic story structures and then decide, but instead, we're going to do our own thing.
There you go.
So the first thing they do is they make Lucifer a fun-loving hedonist.
Shocking, no.
Which, well, he's more brooding in the comic. This is a Lucifer who actually loves humanity. And, you know, yes, he punishes the sinners because that's what he does.
Yes.
But other than that, he likes being around people. He likes having fun. And he gets caught up with it becomes a police procedural because he gets caught up with a detective who intrigues him in ways he cannot quite describe.
Ooh.
And so first two seasons, it is fun. Now, this is a series that lives and dies by the charisma of Tom Ellis, who plays Lucifer.
Right.
Now the rest of the cast is fun, but he makes the show, including one of the conceits they decided for the show is that Lucifer never lies. Ever. Now, that doesn't mean everyone believes him.
Of course.
There's a great line. Do you still think you're the devil? I am the devil.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name.
They do that.
Of course.
He says, now, this guy has a real me may care attitude. but it is fun. And the characters are engaging. And this is a case where the writing isn't lazy.
Good.
It's not necessarily deep, but they're doing interesting things with it. They're playing with the characters and the concepts. And the thing this show remembered is the characters are going to keep drawing you back in. So the characters are what's important.
Yes.
And that, on that level, it's just, it's a great watch. It's available on Hulu. I don't know if it's on any of the streaming systems. But it's just fun.
Cool. Yeah, I gotta say, the one that I found, this is one of the ones where we disagree, and that's totally cool. Mm-hmm. So I will provide at least a little of the defense here. It is unique because it is one of the few times I have seen where the television show is better than the book.
All right.
So that it has that going for it. That said, I finally read the book, and that's kind of a low bar to cross. So, the show I'm talking about is Wynonna Earp. And I love the premise. And in this way, it is similar to Lucifer in so far as they took a really interesting premise, which is the great-great-granddaughter of Wyatt Earp must contend with the reanimated spirits of all the men that her great that Wyatt Earp killed. Which is a great concept. I enjoy that concept. The showrunner is someone who previously did Lost Girl.
Right.
And so there's some of the same conceits, some of the same tropes, and frankly, some of the same hotness all the way around.
Sure.
So in that way, it's pretty good. The writing is a little uneven. Some of the episodes are pretty good. Some of the episodes are terrible. And I mean, I'm only on episode 7 out of 13. And yeah, some of them are good. Some of them really are not so great. But I'm really enjoying with where they're going with it. They're flawed, complex characters. And yeah, I'm willing to give it a continue watching it. So.
Okay. I had trouble getting into the first episode.
Yeah.
So
because the first episode is clunky as
all you know, maybe I'll try and power through the rest of it and see. So the last one I want to talk about tonight, at least yes. on my side, mm-hmm. is American Gods.
Oh yes. Well,
so have you had a chance to see it yet?
Not.
No. So
cross country.
Right. Yeah. So what I'll say is this. Obviously what you have, I mean, the ingredients that it was going to be a good show was almost a foregone conclusion by the ingredients of take the writing of Neil Gaiman, add Brian Fuller as a showrunner, cast Orlando Jones.
Well, cast, give the casting to someone who deserves a freaking Oscar.
I will say that. Now you have some, basically you have a mixture of Fuller regulars, but also just some brilliant other choices. So for the Fuller regulars, you have Kristen Chenoweth as Ostara. You have Gillian Anderson as Media.
Oh.
He has worked with Orlando Jones before. But then you have, we may need the internet, the actor playing Shadow.
Oh,
who,
yes.
Who previously was on a show called The 100 on the CW. And,
yeah. Oh God, what is his name? Vamp.
But, all right. Well, while we're looking up his name, which I really want, I want to say it's a fairly normal name, but he's acting with Ian McShane.
Yeah.
Who casting Ian McShane as Wednesday was, I originally had assumed they were going to go with somebody like Eddie Izzard for Wednesday. Which probably would have worked. However, Ian McShane, somebody remembered, Ian McShane is made of charisma.
Oh, yes. Ricky Whittle, by the way.
Ricky Whittle. So Ricky Whittle and Ian McShane, they have all these scenes together. And so Ian McShane is, I think we all agree, a very skilled actor.
Oh, yeah.
Charismatic, but excellent in his craft.
Oh, yeah.
And anyone who's watched Deadwood knows how good Ian McShane is. And Ian McShane is really good at nonverbal, at conveying with expression. Well, so is Ricky Whittle.
Yep.
And they have whole scenes where it's all based on what their faces are saying.
Yeah.
To convey the story, especially for a character like Shadow, where he's not always that eloquent. Having his body language and his face tell so much of the story. So, an excellent casting. And true to the descriptions of the character from the book.
Oh, yeah.
But also expanding on material either through ancillary story elements that Neil had written for other pieces that tied into the universe, or just expanding material that fleshes out the backstory of characters. They're barely into the book.
Oh yeah,
and the first season's already ended, and they have a long way to go, which is good. Plus, Neil has said he is working on more material.
Good.
That once they reach the end of the book, he will have... And they obviously, you cannot do a series based on American Gods and not have Anansi Boys.
I was going to say, because that perfectly follows in, because it's the same Blessed Universe. It's one of the same characters.
So there is apparently talk.
Yeah.
But the idea is that Neil is doing... what I have heard is Neil is writing another book featuring Shadow.
You say the sweetest things.
And that could form the basis of more material for the series. But yeah, obviously there is serious talk, especially once they cast Orlando Jones.
Oh, yeah.
as Anansi. Because, I mean, Orlando Jones is a gift. And his engagement with the fan base, his ability to engage with the fan base. I mean, they knew what they were getting when they hired him.
I'm kind of kicking myself for not seeing him when he showed up at Emerald City.
Well, and I read an interview, his decisions on how he was going to portray the character. Lot of thought.
Oh yeah.
Lot of thought. But again, you're dealing with Fuller, who is so cinematic, and yes, it's on Showtime.
Yes.
So they maybe can get a little bit more. They get a little bit more play than on network. But this is the man that got away with Hannibal on NBC.
True, and it bears repeating the story that you told me over dinner that made me laugh so loud we almost got thrown out of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So
and this is where I'm kind of disappointed Daniel used up our one swear word.
Oh,
because there is a scene that involves same sex.
Yes.
And male same sex.
Yes.
And the reason
I think that gay doesn't count as a swear word, does it?
No, okay. but I want to go beyond just that. This is a really important scene from an emotional level and a storytelling level.
Mm-hmm.
And when Fuller saw the dailies of the first run of the scene, he went back and said, "You have to reshoot this scene because unless that guy's penis is 12 inch long and shaped like a candy cane, nothing is going into anything. Reshoot the scene and remember where holes exist." And so they did. And I think it probably made the scene hotter.
Oh, well.
Because much more representational of accurate sex.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And again, there's it's a scene it's a scene with emotional weight. And is important for story elements that carry all along in the series. I'm not saying what the specifics were because I don't want to spoil anything for people who are going to watch the series that haven't seen it yet, like you.
Yeah, I'm good, really.
But it is, yeah, and it's... And let's just take a moment to also, again, heap the praises of Gillian Anderson.
Oh my, the one scene that I have seen from that is when she is basically channeling David Bowie. And it's like, oh, hello?
Well, the nature of the character means she's doing many different characters.
Oh yeah, she does that. She does Lucille Ball, doesn't she?
Lucille Ball, Marilyn Monroe. I think there's a riff off of Scarlett O'Hara.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's all brilliant. But the other thing is that, again, a moment of just brilliant, perfect casting. Crispin Glover as Mr. World.
Yes.
Is just... And here's the thing. It's Crispin Glover. You hire Crispin Glover because you want that presence.
Yes.
That he brings. But he... This is also a nuanced performance.
Yes.
From Crispin, which is great. And just, I mean, overall, Emily Browning?
Yes.
Emily Browning as Laura Moon.
Yes.
Where it's a case of a lot of the material that has not appeared in other media before is based on fleshing out the Laura character.
Right.
I also like, one of the decisions they made, which really works for the series, that's a change from the book, is to make the leprechaun Mad Sweeney a main character.
Yeah, worth it though.
It's worth it, well, especially because he becomes, most of his scenes are with Laura.
Yeah.
And the two play off each other beautifully.
Well, and frankly, I would love to see, and unless I'm missing it and I need to double check IMDb, but the guy who plays Mad Sweeney,
mm-hmm.
I want to see doing a buddy brother flick with the guy who plays Tormund Giantsbane from Game of Thrones.
It could be interesting. Yeah, that would be really interesting. Good, but again, it's the, yes, they look the part, but they're also, the performances are great. So yeah, it's pretty much what we expected. It's all these elements coming together to give us the series that frankly, with as beloved as that book is amongst the fan base, you had to, otherwise it would all fall apart. Well, the last thing is the amount of respect that they're giving Neil.
Oh, yeah.
He gets to approve everything. If he says, no, I can't, you can't do that, Brian's like, well, I guess we're not doing that then.
Well, I mean, that's good and that's wonderful. And you have to fully understand that all it would take would be for them to override Neil on one thing. He sends out one tweet and half their fan base will evaporate.
Yeah.
And you know that as well as I do.
Now, this is true, but I think that just isn't really Fuller's modus operandi.
Exactly.
And again, it's a case of this is the right creator with the right material.
Well, and frankly, I mean, this is a guy who sent guys back to reshoot a scene because the gay sex wasn't accurate enough.
Right.
And so yes, he has a high standard for what that he holds to himself. And he has the standard of working with and respecting the source and the source author. So, of course, it's going to be lovely and glorious. And I look forward to binging the heck out of it.
So the last thing I will say for you, because I know of our shared fan base, Peter Stormare.
Oh, yes.
As Chernabog. Everything. But that one of the sisters is Cloris Leachman.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's all wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's just cannot wait till next season to see where they go next. Okay, do you have anything else on TV or do you want to have anything else on American Gods before we
there's just
I'm
pause.
We had touched briefly earlier on comic books.
Yes.
So, with comic books, we're kind of in a weird space. As the industry as a whole is, it's no big secret that the comics industry has been in trouble for a while. The thing that's really keeping comics going overall is it's right now great fodder for other media.
Yes.
But one of the problems that's really affecting the industry right now is just the model is set in such a way that it can't evolve and it needs to.
Yes.
The biggest issue right now, so there was a Black Panther comic that was coming out that ended up getting canceled because there weren't enough pre-orders.
Now this was the, because there was the ones of Ta-Nehisi Coates that did. But it was an expansion on that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
because the first one came out and that was glorious.
Yeah, and this was I do think this was a something else featuring the Black Panther. But the point was, you had a book that didn't get enough pre-orders, so they ended up canceling it. No other industry works like that.
Yeah,
you know, a book's coming out, you're going to do a print run. You know, no one pre-orders. I mean, not that, yes, people pre-order books, but you don't decide whether or not to go with a book based on pre-orders.
Exactly.
You don't base releasing a TV show or a movie based on pre-order tickets.
Yeah.
Comics is the only industry that does this, and this is largely due to the stranglehold of Diamond Distributing. And the problem is, Diamond has their model. They have a chokehold on distribution. The problem is, their very model is what's slowly poisoning the industry.
How about that?
And what it would take is somebody going up against them, but it would be a huge risk of cash to even try. And no one has that much money to burn on the chance of trying to upend the system.
Exactly.
The closest you're going to get is the digital comics movement.
True.
Which has its base, but it soon may be the only hope. So that's one of the problems. The other thing is what's going on with the companies. So, all right, not counting the various smaller publishers.
Fair enough.
Smaller publishers are always going to be the ones taking bigger risks, trying more innovative stuff. You know, yes, that's where Wynonna Earp's going to come from. It's also where Saga is going to come from and where The Walking Dead is going to come from. You're going to get the Zenitrope books, which are the cheesecake fairy tale remakes.
Of course.
But you're also going to get Pretty Deadly, which is another great indie book. But the industry is still largely driven by the big two. which is Marvel and DC. But again, this is part of what's driving that right now is the fodder for the other media.
True.
And one of the biggest problems that's becoming more and more apparent is there's not enough communication between different divisions of these companies. Wonder Woman came out. There should have been a great tie-in to coincide with the movie to bring more people to the comics.
Of course.
There wasn't.
Of course.
In fact, there was a storyline not even really focusing on Diana going on right now while the book's out.
Yeah. Silly.
Guardians of the Galaxy didn't have any real special stuff coming out in their line when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything special on either Spider-Man or Thor for this summer. They're not trying to take advantage of the possible synergy between their other media releases to bring in new comic fans.
Well, and that's the thing is, even if it isn't just a... Well, you go back and you think about... the uptick in Star Wars, mm-hmm. once both Rogue One and mm-hmm. Episode 7 came out. But then also, what was it? Those tie-ins that they did for Fury Road, when that came out, was it 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. But those were, those were very specific tie-ins.
Yeah.
And also, those are both media, both stories that aren't original to the comics media.
Fair enough.
So that's, and there are stories where they're not dependent on the comic media technically to keep them alive.
Fair enough.
And then the other issue you've got going on is now on the front of, you know, who's innovating better right now. Marvel is trying to say we're changing the industry. No. And they're not. They're not doing anything original. What have they got going? They've turned Captain America into a Nazi.
They've turned Captain America into a Nazi. They're doing the whole stupid crap with Magneto.
Yeah.
Let's hit it here. Captain America, Nazi. Magneto, Nazi. Scarlet Witch, Nazi. Pause. Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I've ranted about Nazi Cap before. Yeah. Magneto. Oh, you know, the guy who was in a concentration camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. What's her name?
Scarlet Witch?
Scarlet Witch.
Romany.
Romany. Again, not gonna be a Nazi.
Yeah.
And
they keep adding, oh, we're gonna keep the storyline going longer than we said we were. It's like, stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it. Whereas over at DC, you have actually, they're not crowing about their innovation, they're just innovating.
Yeah.
They're trying some new formats of size and print quality.
I'm sure that the size is driving some people, the collectors, crazy, but
they're doing it as a way to represent some particular art.
Okay.
But the other thing, it's what you said earlier in the episode. They're taking some stories and seeing what they can do original with them.
Yeah.
Flint, you know, all of the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Which is amazing. I mean, between Flintstones and the Snagglepuss story arcs that they're doing, it's like, who would have thought?
Well, and so there's a story that came out just this week that people are saying is one of the most hardcore things they've written recently. It's Batman and Elmer Fudd.
What?
Yeah, I know. And again, these are things that sound like they should be insane and not work. But it's DC deciding, you know what, we're going to try something. And it's... The decision is, instead of adding these cartoony characters and making the whole story cartoony, it's taking these cartoony characters and altering them to fit the grittier environment they put them in.
Cue the Joker.
It's actually Elmer Fudd versus Batman.
Oh, even better.
So, but yeah, these are the things, and yes, some of it sounds silly on surface, but... The Flintstones was one of the most amazing books I've read recently. And I'm waiting for when they finally get Snagglepuss over on Comixology so that I can pick that up. Because that's generally how I get my comic books these days, is going through Comixology. The Flintstones book, you're definitely talking about... Again, it's looking at modern issues. So you were asking earlier at dinner, who is the creative team? It's Mark Russell and Steve Paw.
And that's for the Flintstones.
That's for that's for the Flintstones, just in general.
Which they deserve a freaking award.
Now, given Russell is, I believe it's Russell's the writer and Pa is the artist.
Okay.
But still, I mean, the artwork in this, because again, it's not traditional Flintstones art. It's not Fred without a neck.
Yeah.
They look much more like regular people, which lends more to the story because you feel like you have more at stake with them now because they're much more like real people.
How about that?
So, yeah, it's one of the things I was joking with is they even brought in the Great Gazoo, which was the cousin Oliver of the Flintstones cartoon in the early days. It's like, why did you brought in an alien who is essentially a genie?
Yeah.
So they got rid of the genie aspect. Great Gazoo is A, not his name, it's his title.
Yes.
Which translates roughly to Game Warden. He is there to keep aliens from interfering with the developing culture of Earth.
Brave soul.
So, yeah.
He's enforcing the Prime Directive.
He really is. But they look at social inequity. They look at post-traumatic stress. And I know we talked about it before, but it bears repeating. This is what DC is doing. And they look at other avenues. And on their superhero books, they've got a very simple premise. Hey, our heroes are going to be heroes again.
Nice.
With that, the only other thing I think, we've been going on for a bit. Let's talk about podcasts briefly.
Okay.
After all, we are one. Yeah. So the first thing I want to point out, in December, in Seattle, the first ever PodCon is going to occur. This is from the same people who do VidCon.
Okay.
It's a convention about podcasting from the fan perspective.
Okay.
And Welcome to Nightville is going to be there, a bunch of others. But it's going to be in Seattle at the Seattle Convention Center. So we're going to have locally the first kind of big focus podcast convention of that style.
Awesome.
So I am planning on attending.
Cool.
And I'm trying to convince Don't Read the Latin and
of course.
And our other podcasting buddies to come along. And yeah, so that should be interesting. I'm hoping that Wolf359 will appear.
Oh, that right there will sign, seal, and deliver me showing my happy butt up there.
Because they're currently they just started up their final season.
Yeah.
As good as ever.
Of course.
And so, you know, that's going on. I know we're also probably getting what is going to be the final season of the Black Tapes podcast. I like this idea that with narrative podcasts, one of the ideas is at some point they probably should end.
Yes.
Now, Night Vale is still going on, but Night Vale is using a structure that supports going on a little bit more.
A little more. However, at some point, they are going to jump the shark.
Sure. But at that point, the thing I like about Night Vale is they've developed their network, so they're producing other shows.
True.
You know, they're deciding to deal with it. Night Vale itself is the core show, but they are using it as a platform for doing other, and again, not Night Vale spinoffs, original stuff.
Yeah.
So again, innovation, which is great. I hope once we get Family Skeletons up and running, which it's making progress. I'm back to work on it.
Yay!
After a too long hiatus. But yeah, it's I was talking to somebody recently about with podcasts. It's this great medium because it's so easy to get in. Anyone can do it.
Just about. I mean, there is a certain level of technical whatever to get there, but
it's not daunting.
No.
And as long as, I mean, the challenge is, are you going to be able to be entertaining? Now, we have a small listener base, but we have a listener base.
And we love each and every one of you. Both of you.
We're in double digits.
Hey!
We're in double digits.
Cool. I guess the thing that gets it for me, you talk about things that go on and on versus things that end. And let us pause to think about other media where things have gone on just too damn long.
Supernatural.
That was sitting on the tip of my tongue, and I can't even say it simply because I've never seen a single episode, and I still know what's gone on too blessed long.
Yeah.
Contrast that with the ones that end too soon.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, if you listen really closely, you can hear people bemoaning the cancellation of Firefly 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I risk my brown coat status by saying no, they shouldn't make a Firefly something unless it's either a reboot, which would be heresy, or an expansion of the universe, which would also pretty much be heresy.
Right.
Babylon
5 is a great example of they had a plan, 5 years, we're done.
Exactly. And they still milked it.
A little bit, yeah.
But so there's the ones that go on too long, aka Supernatural. There's the ones that end too soon, and then there are those sweet spots in the middle, like B5, like
Breaking Bad is a lot of people hold up as an example.
Breaking Bad is a good example, although I still can't get into it myself. But there are other examples where it does tell a particular story. It runs that through that lifespan, and it ends, and that's a good thing.
Well, and I think that's the formula that American Horror Story has built itself on. It's tell self-contained stories.
Yes.
Don't overstay your welcome.
Yes.
I'm glad. I think also the creators at some point go, you know, at some point we've just got to end the story.
Yeah.
And especially if the story has a natural progression.
Exactly. The last thing, of course, is, what are you reading?
So I'm currently reading High Stakes, which is the latest Wildcard novel. It's actually what I was reading last time.
Yeah.
I just haven't had a lot of chance to sit down and finish it. I'm going to be honest. I want to finish it out because I've been a fan of the series for a long time. But how this one ends determines if I'll ever pick another one up again.
Fair enough.
It's the last one kind of left me, and I want to finish the arc.
Gotcha.
But the way it's going, and depending on if it ends great, great. If this one leaves me with another feeling of unsatisfaction, then the series is over. At which point, my plan is, unless something else really interesting pops up in the meantime, is to finally move on to Sandman Slim.
Awesome. Cool.
Unless Butcher speeds up his work on the next Dresden file, which I know he's writing. That might push it out, or another Gale Carriager. But other than that, I think Sandman Slim is definitely on the next. What about you?
The book that I just finished was a series of short stories called Stories of Your Life by Ted. I'm going to guess it's Chang.
Okay.
It is best known for containing the short story, which is the premise for the movie Arrival.
Okay.
Which was, can we agree, fan-freaking-tastic.
And that's the one I have to admit I still have to see.
It is well worth it. The thing that I will say about this is that it fits perfectly into the short story genre.
Mm-hmm.
And is able to tell the story within those constraints.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say the person who did the adaptation from the book to the movie deserves a special cookie and a pat and an award if they have one. Because they did a remarkable job, but the original story blew my socks off.
Good.
It didn't have the Hollywood conflict-driven whatever that seems to be so popular this season, but the story was evocative and touching and is a... There's a feeling that when you finally see the show, you will get at the end that is just this feeling of a story well told.
Okay.
And the book has that too. You finish it and you just kind of go,
nice. All right. Well, with that, thank you all for listening. I have a ballpark number, but we'll just say we're in double digits.
Hey!
And if you'd like to drop Daniel and I a line, you can reach us by going to fanboynewsnetwork.com and leaving us a little note in the comment section for the episode. With that, we will be back in the near future. Hopefully, we're about going to get back on our schedule.
Hey,
none of us have got a big vacation plan. You've got a lot of free time right now.
I was going to say, I suddenly have a whole lot of free time, so you know, I might like break into your house and like record something while you're home.
That could be interesting. All right, so everyone, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you all later.
Have a good time, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2017 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.